Welcome, Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host. And we're a group of law enforcement professionals that talk about today's news and issues, but we do it from a law enforcement perspective. And let me introduce you to the crew. Guys, if you don't mind waiting for the video portion of our show, we have former LAPD commander, Lieutenant Chuck Springer, on the show. He's currently residing in Florida, so thanks for being back on the show, Chuck. And Scott Steyer from Florida, actually. I never can keep up. Are you still, are you somewhere in like Wyoming or somewhere, or are you further, you're further
I'm
east
in Colorado now? Currently.
Currently. All right.
Good deal. I have my house in Wyoming still. I don't know if I'll ever leave that. I love that place, but yes, I'm in Colorado.
All right. Excellent. And so Scott's got a great special forces background with Green Beret, Delta Force. It's great. So and he brings a very unique perspective to the show. So thanks for being on the show, gentlemen. Appreciate it. And a shout out to our sponsors. You know, our title sponsor is Galls at Galls.com. Don't forget that radio code. It's radio15 in order to get 15% off your next purchase at Galls.com. We have ComplianTechnologies.com, our satellite radio sponsor. Gunlearn.com, MyMedicare.live, SafeguardRecruiting.com, our streaming sponsor. Thanks to them, we're streaming over a million people right now during the live show. And TwoBells.com, they built a new online store at LeoRoundtable.com. Please check them out. And hey, a shout out to Brian Burns for the Tampa Free Press at TampaFP.com. Thanks for carrying our content, Brian. Also, thanks for that interview last week about the relaunch of Leo Affairs at LeoAffairs.ch. And thanks for doing that and getting great, great results from that. A shout out to Ray Dietrich with FormerLawman.com. And Travis H with LawOfficer.com. Thanks to all those entities for helping make this show happen. And now, what in the world are we going to be talking about today? Just to kind of whet the appetite here, we have a couple main stories. The first one is the Eighth Circuit shocker, no bond for illegal immigrants caught up in the U.S. interior. I'll explain that to our audience. It's pretty cool, actually. The Trump and the DOJ, massive win. And then we got the California Attorney General. He rushes the court to stop a sheriff from counting ballots in Riverside County because there's been some funny business going on, and the AG who's running for governor doesn't want them to discover anything. It's what it looks like. We got an Illinois cop fired for trying to help ICE through a social media post. That's interesting. Body cam of Baltimore police officers fatally shooting a 37-year-old during a foot chase. We have that. We got another one, a suspect, another video. Suspect fatally shot by Coolidge police officers when he charges at them with a machete. We got the feds moving to dismiss the charges against the officers, the remaining officers involved in the Breonna Taylor raid. There is some relief there. And then finally, a video shows a fallen officer fatally shooting a knife-wielding suspect after two people end up being stabbed. So that's what we have so far. So if you guys are ready, let's go in and start off with the first main topic. It is at Tampa Free Press at TampaFP.com. The Eighth Circuit shocker, no bond for illegal immigrants caught in the U.S. interior. So in a sweeping decision that could fundamentally alter how immigration law is enforced all over the borders of the United States, a federal appeals court, they ruled on Wednesday that the government has the authority to detain certain undocumented immigrants indefinitely without bond, even if they've lived in the United States for decades. So I'm going to repeat that because people need to understand what the government has been up against and what they've been forced to do. There's some conflicting laws from other courts. This may end up going to the Supreme Court. But again, I say that the government now has the authority to detain some undocumented immigrants indefinitely. I mean, like indefinitely without bond. They can't get out of jail, even if they have lived here in the United States for decades. And what they've been having to do is release them on the promise to appear in court, which is ludicrous, right? Because these guys are on the run, right? And so now we've got some judges with common sense, and they're coming from, the judges are in districts and circuits that are shocking. So the United Court of Appeals for the Eighth Circuit. So we've got some different circuits here. We're going to explain that in a minute, but we're dealing with the Eighth Circuit right now. These are the guys who just handed down this victory to the Department of Homeland Security. And the bad guy that was suing on this, Herrera Avila. Avila is a Mexican citizen. He first entered the U.S. illegally back in 2006. He ended up getting arrested during a 2025 traffic stop in Minneapolis, which is how it goes on. But he gets stopped in Minneapolis, of all places, right? So while a lower court had previously ordered his release on a $7,500 bond, can you believe that? We got some illegal from that's been here since 2026. He gets stopped. What is that, like 19 years later, right? Almost 20 years later, and they want to release him on a $7,500 bond. Anyhow, the appellate court ruled 2-1 in reversing the lower court's decision, saying that now they can, it's mandatory, they can mandatory detain immigrants like Avila while they're awaiting their removal proceedings. Now, the legal battle is centered on they're calling it a granular but high stakes interpretation of federal law. Now, the federal law that deals with this, it says that applicants for admission who are seeking admission, you know, to the United States must be detained if they are not clearly and beyond a doubt entitled to be in the country. And so for years, legal scholars and previous administrations of the U.S., they acted as if this mandatory detention had only applied to people who physically were standing at the border or the airport, you know, trying to get in, right? So Avila, our bad guy here, his lawyers argued that because he had lived in the state of Minnesota for years and was not actively trying to cross the border, he was not seeking admission and was therefore entitled to a bond hearing, right? And then, of course, you know, we're going to release you on your promise to attend the bond hearing, right? But the court's majority, led by Circuit Judge Bobby Shepherd, he's the hero here in this, he disagreed. The court ruled that anyone present that's here, no matter if they're living here or for how long in the United States, without being legally admitted, so they're illegals, by definition that they are an, quote, applicant for admission, unquote. You got to love it, right? And here's a quote from the Fifth Circuit saying that just as an applicant to a college seeks admission, an applicant for admission to the United States is seeking admission to the same, regardless of whether the person is actively engages in further affirmative acts to gain admission. And that's what the court wrote. So, but there's some controversy. So we're talking about, you know, the Eighth Circuit for all practical purpose right now. The decision was not unanimous. There was a dissent. So the judge, Robert Erickson, argued that the court was upending nearly 30 years of established practice, even though it may have been wrong. He's saying that it's already, you know, it's established practice. He noted that for three decades, all three branches of the government understood that people caught in the interior of the country were eligible for bond unless they had committed specific serious crimes. So the court now holds that Avila and millions of others are subject to mandatory detention, according to Judge Erickson. He warned that the ruling ignores the ordinary meaning of the word seeking, which implies a present action, not like standing at a port of entry, that kind of stuff. So he didn't like the ruling, but he was in the minority, right? It doesn't matter. The ruling aligns the Eighth Circuit, which are the guys that just overturned the lower court, and they cover Arkansas, Iowa, Minnesota, Missouri, Nebraska, and the North and South Dakota. And it aligns them with the conservative U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit, which is Louisiana, Mississippi, and Texas. I had to look that up. But there's a conflict because the U.S. Court of Appeal for the Seventh Circuit, they don't agree. And so normally the article says when this happens, when the circuits split, likely this case will end up going to the U.S. Supreme Court. But for now, the ruling gives the feds a powerful tool. And under this interpretation, the government is not required to grant bond. They can keep these dudes in jail until they're, you know, they work it out for them to be shipped off somewhere else. So you gotta love it. Scott Stiart, what's your opinion on this?
Well, you know, it's interesting. The one judge, he's like, you know, well, it's, let's just stay with status quo, right? That's so crazy. Like part of the reason why we're in the position we are today is because of the crazy interpretation of what seeking is. Come on. Like, seriously, you have to be standing there, you know, waiting to get it, but you're already in. So you already made it. Where's the logic and common sense in that? They're illegal, whether they're standing, you know, waiting to get in, trying to get in or in. Right. You know, so just that, just the way it was interpreted, I guess, 30 years ago is part of the reason why it led up today. So this has just been an ongoing thing. And it just, to me, is common sense. It makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, I can only imagine, Chuck, if I was in Spain or France and I snuck in over the border and stuff and someone stopped me and said, yeah, we're going to let you just sign here on a promise to appear in court or just pay, you know, $7,500 and we'll let you out and we'll see you in court in 6 months, you know. Yeah, right. That's going to happen.
Yeah, you know, this kind of falls under, part of this argument falls under that whole premise of, you know, once people become accustomed to preferential treatment, then fair or legal treatment is perceived as discriminatory or unfair. It's immaterial that you've been here for 20 years, and it's immaterial that you've been interpreting the law wrongly for 30 years, right? And again, like Scott mentioned, the fact that somebody has to be standing at a port of entry to be seeking admission is ridiculous. That's like, you know, somebody slapping my hand because I took two cookies out of the cookie jar and I complained that I didn't take all of the cookies out of the cookie jar. why are you punishing me? Right. I'm getting a little simplistic there, but I agree with this, because what's going to happen if you do this ad nauseum? How many people are actually going to show up for the bond hearing? Now you're right back to gaffling people up again. And
not going to happen.
You're chasing your tail around. So, it is what it is. I mean, I feel bad for some of these people that have been here for so long, because we've institutionally excused their behavior and they've become accustomed to it. Maybe I don't feel bad for them, but I can see why they argue it.
Right. I'm empathetic for the position they're in. Now, they did create that, that's where I think a lot of people, where the media is kind of twisting it. Like, I mean, you know, they're making all these people who, are against immigration. It's like, no, we're not against it. It needs to be legal. And it's like, yes, we do empathize. I can't get the word right now.
You have empathy.
Yeah. Empathy. We have empathy for them. But it's just the fact, like, you have laws. If you just pick and choose, then why the heck even have laws? It's something small that happens and it just deteriorates, the rule of law, and it just makes some laws important, some not. You just can't choose. You don't have that choice. So,
well, guys, you're giving me a great segue. I'm going to go out of order now because of where you guys went with this, which I wasn't even anticipating. We're going to be talking about Governor Ron DeSantis going up against some sheriffs on this exact issue. So stick with us. We have our first commercial break. This is going to get very, very interesting. I promise you guys, we'll be right back.
My family only cares about one thing, that I come home safe.
At Gall's, every order begins with a promise, made with purpose. Stitched for support. Backed with pride. Answered by dedicated hands. Delivering the standard you have sworn to uphold. We serve more than the mission. We serve the person. Each piece is engineered to help get our first responders through the shift and back home safe.
Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host. We are joined by, we got our Special Forces Delta Force badass Scott Steyer here, and we've also got Lieutenant Chuck Springer, former LAPD commander. And, they created this monster. We've been talking about illegals and about how the law has changed to backing up Department of Homeland Security. And now when we have an illegal, they can be detained without bond, and they can be held actually in jail without being given a summons or paying bail or whatever. They get out on a promise to appear, and we're finally, we've been making a lot of headway with Trump 2.0. But the segue on this is that this next article, this next story, Tampa Free Press at tampafp.com, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, he is clashing with sheriffs over a common sense path to citizenship. So, because both you guys, Scott is from Florida, Chuck is in Florida, but because you guys are like now elsewhere, I mean, Scott's in Colorado and also kind of like Wyoming area, and Chuck is from LAPD, which arguably is on the liberal side of things. I'm curious where you guys are at on this thing. So let me get with the story here. And there's been a 180 degree flip by somebody. So a divide has emerged between Governor Ron DeSantis, who I think everybody across the country, except for Gavin Newsom, has huge respect for, and some of Florida's top law enforcement officials over the future of immigration enforcement. Now, the friction follows a decision that happened about a week or so ago. The State Immigration Enforcement Council in Florida, they're advocating for a legal path forward for non-criminal undocumented immigrants. Now, I'm going to stop right there because they say non-criminal undocumented immigrants. These dudes are freaking illegal. All right. So I'm watching some conservatives, sheriffs, some people that are making up the State Immigration Enforcement Council using this word, but don't be fooled by it. And I love the sheriffs, but let's call it like it is. They're illegals, right? They're illegals that have not done anything, not got caught for anything more illegal after they've got here, but they're still illegal. But they're advocating a path forward for them to become citizens, I guess. And so it's a move Ron DeSantis publicly rebuked on Thursday as not a good policy. So the council, and this is a council made of like law enforcement, it's chaired by Polk County Sheriff Grady Judd. We love Grady. He's a panelist on the show. Well, we did a Thanksgiving Day special with Grady, and we have a lot of respect for Grady. So that's what gives me pause when I hear these things going on. It's composed by the chairman, Grady Judd from Polk County, and composed of officials appointed to advise the state advisory role on illegal immigration. And they agreed to draft a letter to the president of the United States, Donald Trump, and congressional leaders. So I don't know if that was part of their duties or if they just took this upon themselves to say, I mean, they know that what their consensus does not really flush well with the governor. So they're going outside that umbrella and they're sending a letter to the president. I'm assuming they have the purview to do that, or maybe they're just doing this on their own. I don't know, but I'm just throwing that out there. Now, the proposal suggests that undocumented immigrants who have no criminal record, that they pay a fine, and also who they contribute to society, that they should be allowed to remain in the country under specific conditions. So I thought that it was talking about a path for citizenship, but they're really just leave them here, not force them to become citizens, but leave them here. The shift represents a 180-degree turn for Grady Judd. So listen to this. Only a year ago, Sheriff Judd in Polk County, he urged the federal government to expedite the removal of undocumented immigrants, regardless of their criminal history, whether they were, you know, a problem child or not. On Tuesday of last week, however, Judge stood his ground, describing the need for a pragmatic exit ramp for those living the American dream. And here's a quote from Grady saying that, hey, there are those here that are working hard. They have kids in college. They're going to church on Sunday. They're not a drag on society. In fact, they're helping society. We need to find a path for them. And other high-profile members of the council, we have Pinellas County Sheriff Bob Gilteri. We have Charlotte County Sheriff Bill Prummel. They backed the proposal as well. And Sheriff Gilteri over in Pinellas, he argued that targeting long-term residents with no records is a misuse of resources. So he's talking about it more from a logistical side of it. I know Chuck Springer's the logistics guy, right? I mean, you know, they're talking about, I know what he's thinking. He thinks we're going to spend all this time, energy, and money going after these guys, which are not really the main bad guys. In South Florida, we have Palm Beach County Sheriff Rick Bradshaw. He echoed the sentiment. So that's kind of what we have. And just before we kind of, you know, go down the rabbit hole, I will say that, let's just take Plant City, for instance, where I started off at the Boss Hog Radio. We have Plant City, strawberries. We have people, you know, we don't have a lot of Americans that are in those fields picking strawberries and working the orange tree orchards and all that stuff. We have a lot of Mexicans. These dudes, people that lay my tile, they got a work ethic like second to none. I mean, it's like, and they do excellent work. So I get it. You know, they worry about yanking all these guys out. It's not like they're going out necessarily. They're looking for the worst of the worst, but these guys kind of huddle together. So I know, and I've read the stories about how they'll go in, they grab one bad guy, and he's in a house full of like 19 others, and they'll leave with 20. You know, I get that. But now Grady has done an about face very recently and said, but he's also in a county where they've got a lot of these guys doing all that kind of work too, that manual labor stuff. So, Scott, why don't you take this first and then Chuck jump in. We got a minute and 43 okay. seconds.
I'll tell you, I tend to agree with the sheriff, and I'll tell you why. Look, if somebody was to come through the border legally, right? That's an unknown. We don't know if, you know, yeah, we might do some background check. I mean, but how well can you really check somebody that maybe comes from a country that they don't have that. So you're getting an unknown there, right? They might come into this country. They might be the greatest, you know, immigrant, turn into an American, love America, be patriotic, assimilate, all that. Then you might get one that's a complete psycho, murderer, whatever. If they have already proven that they have been in this country without ever being arrested and already have, you know, I'm talking about years, you know, certainly 10, 20, whatever. And they have never been in trouble and they have kids and they're in the society, they've assimilated, they're doing everything great. Then, I mean, we created this situation, our government did. So I think, you know, given the circumstances, I mean, I like it. I think it makes sense, and I think it's the right thing to do.
All right, excellent, Chuck Sprayer.
Yeah, you know, I think why you're seeing a lot of these sheriffs do this or think like this, and you touched on this, is there's a considerable number of illegals that are part of the American workforce. You know, in Palm Beach County, we're having issues with construction now because a lot of those workers have gone back.
You know? We got a commercial sneaking up on me, man. So stick with me, guys. We're going to go to the commercial break. We'll be right back here. All right. And it's time to talk about Compliant Technologies at ComplianTechnologies.com. They are committed to providing non-lethal solutions to help officers gain the upper hand safely and rapidly in a humane, low ethics manner, utilizing their CD3, which stands for Conductive Distraction De-escalation Device Technology. Now, their flagship product, we all know by now, is called the Glove. It's helped officers not only tens of thousands of times, but they had over 250,000 deployments, no injuries, no deaths. They've actually achieved non-lethal status in an arena that predominantly can only offer less lethal results. And when it comes to weapons retention, transitioning to a sidearm or conducted energy weapon, the Glove of ComplianTechnologies.com, they have virtually eliminated weapons confusion. So stay ahead of the game with Compliant Technologies and their revolutionary CD3, the hundreds of agencies of Arden 22 nationwide. And friends, take it from me, when it comes to safety, this is one of the most common sense, hands-on solutions that's ever come along. So go to ComplianTechnologies.com today and tell them that Chip sent you. Again, that's ComplianTechnologies.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com, the Law Enforcement Talk Show. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host. We're joined by former LAPD Commander, Lieutenant Chuck Springer, and also Scott Steyer, former Green Beret and Delta Force operative. So thank you guys so much. You know, we had a good segue. We were talking about Department of Homeland Security getting a great win in court involving the 8th, the 7th, and the 5th Circuits. And we use that as a segue to get to this next story, which is about Governor Ron DeSantis in Florida. And he's kind of being pitted against some of the sheriffs, including there's a committee that's being chaired by Sheriff from Polk County, Grady Judd. And they're saying, look, let's not, they've kind of done an about face, especially Sheriff Judd, and said, let's not go after all these illegals and boot them out of the country. Let's provide a path forward for them. And not necessarily grab and remove all of them, but it's been a 180 degree turn for Sheriff Judd. And when we went to commercial break, I know Lieutenant Springer was talking, so we're going to go back to Lieutenant Springer and pick that up. Go ahead, Chuck.
Yeah, like I mentioned during the break, and you had touched on it, I think you're seeing this position on the sheriff's part because there is a considerable workforce made up of illegal immigrants in this country. And, you know, in my county in particular, We've seen impacts in the construction industry because a lot of these guys have left and go back to their countries, and you're having difficulties in that sector. And you mentioned the agricultural sector, and I'm sure that's the same there. And it's probably very similar in many states. You know, California has a huge ag sector, and you know, California has always been a bedrock of illegal immigration and migrant workers working in that industry. You know, I'm a little split here because, you know, if you're going to give the folks here citizenship that are here illegally, you're kind of, you know, supporting a wrong, and you're probably putting them in front of other people that are trying to get here legally. I think maybe what they need to do short term is maybe provide, you know, temporary 1-year employment visas, right? Just to reduce the impact on the economy, and then we can decide from there, you know, how are we going to proceed with these folks. So we want to try to keep them here because you don't want to impact your workforce, but you don't want to just start giving them a path to citizenship right away. I don't think that would be the right way to go. But let's get them identified. Let's find out who's here, first of all, right? Try to do some kind of background check and then provide them with a temporary work visa.
So let me ask you guys this then, for both of you guys. There are people out there that are saying that these guys are taking jobs away from Americans. I don't know that that's necessarily true with all aspects. I mean, maybe in construction, agriculture, you brought up a good point. I can't imagine many Americans standing in line to be working the orange groves or the strawberry fields, you know, picking. So I don't know that that's necessarily the case. But I suspect that there are, well, look at all the truck drivers. And there are, what have we had? Like, I think I heard the other day, like, was it 10 or 20,000 truck drivers that have been pulled now, the licenses that have been pulled?
I think it's 17,000. Yeah.
So How do you feel about that? Should they ask her, do you think it's something where they look, let's ascertain the laws of supply and demand, how many American citizens jobs are really being taken away because we have immigrants that are doing that, and then weigh it, do it on a case by, or not even a case by case basis, but a category by category basis? Or what do you guys recommend?
Well, you know, I mean, sometimes we're our own worst enemies. I had my house pressure washed last year, and the guy that owns the company is a white guy. He's an American citizen, and he had two Guatemalan guys working for him. And he goes, I won't hire any white guys because they don't work hard. These guys bust their butts. Yeah. So sometimes we're our own worst enemy, right? You know, is there a bunch of American citizens standing in line to be truck drivers? I don't know. Is there?
Yeah. So imagine a situation, because if this all started where, let's say the border maintains the way it is right now, no one's getting in and out. Now we can manage who comes in, how much, for what purpose. And then if you can fix this, you know, these crazy Democrats where, you know, these sanctuary cities where they were literally take an illegal immigrant that was convicted of a crime and not tell ICE about him, put him back into society to keep doing this. That's crazy. So there needs to be this happy medium. If we can keep the border the way it is, shut down, manage who and when and how many of what types come in, right? Fix the sanctuary cities, then this whole thing goes away. But we created this. When I say we, I'm talking about corruption in our politics, you know, in politics and playing politics. That's what screwed all this up, right? So it's so bad that we have to compromise at some level. And there's a lot, and like you said, it's not just that. It's just not like, how do we do this, but how do we do this? And you know, where it's ethical, where you know, politically you're not damaging yourself. You know, I get it. Like, doing the right thing is important, but you have to weigh all that out. And right now, I think the way it's happening, I agree with it, but can it be done better? Absolutely. To where we're not pissing off a lot of people. You know, I have known illegal immigrants just in some work situations that they seem to be more patriotic than some of these white Karen liberals and some of these, like I'm serious. Like, they are more grateful to be in this country and appreciate our country more than these other people. So, I mean, I don't know. I think we could manage this a lot better.
Well, guys, that's a great segue into the next one then. And you guys, this is flowing pretty good. So we've got RVMnews.com, which stands for Red Voice Media. Illinois cop fired for trying to help ICE with a social media post. So that was something like Scott just touched on. So we're in Illinois, March 22nd, 2026. So the city of Elgin, Illinois, they terminated, not just discipline, but they terminated this officer following an internal investigation to a social media post that referenced federal immigration enforcement. Now, in all honesty, they had been gunning for this guy earlier in his career, tried to fire him. It didn't go through. So he was already on the radar. But city officials announced that Elgin police officer Jason Lentz, he was fired after an independent review determined that he engaged in misconduct tied to a post that he made in October. Now, I'm laughing because he got very creative in how he did it. He had been in the grease before, so he was dancing around. You know, I guess he figured on a technicality he could do this. So listen to what he did. It's going to make you guys smile, and you guys probably read the article. Lentz, he's been placed on administrative leave after the Elgin Police Chief Anna Laley became aware of the post, and she initiated an investigation. So according to the city, the post included a reference to Immigration and Customs Enforcement, so ICE, and it listed locations where the officer sarcastically suggested agents should not conduct enforcement. And he wrote messages like, if I were ICE, I wouldn't, like, would not check. And he gave a series of locations. And then he made another one like, definitely none there. And there's no way you'd find any there, you know. So we got kind of creative, you know, and what he was doing. The post And also, he tagged Department of Homeland Security in the post. He also tagged U.S. Customs and Border Protection as well, which probably didn't help him out any. The investigation concluded that his actions violated department standards, and officials determined that the termination was the appropriate disciplinary measure. I know it was the chief and the not the chief, the city clerk, I believe, that agreed as well. And it said that it was approved by city's corporation council and the city manager. The chief addressed the decision in a statement following the investigation, saying that Lentz's termination, the officer's termination for misconduct, is warranted and necessary to uphold standards the community expects and deserves. There's a little tell in here coming up. His actions do not reflect the standards of this agency. I ask the Elgin community to not judge our current and future officers based on the actions of this one individual. The department remains, here's where you know where they're coming from. The department remains committed to working with all members of the community to build lasting and meaningful relationships that are grounded in respect, understanding, accountability, and trust. These values have not and will not change. So, in other words, she might as well just said that we don't want to intimidate the illegal community from coming forward with reporting crime and being worried about being deported and stuff like that. So commentary on this one. We have a minute, just over a minute before we take our next commercial break. Chuck, you want to take this one?
Yeah, I'll comment on it a little bit. You know, the problem is the article really doesn't explain what his prior misconduct was. You know, he may have a bunch of sustained complaints and that are similar in nature, and this was the one that just got him, you know, kicked off the table. I don't know. You know, you have to keep in mind whether you agree or not with your particular department's or your city's policy on how you work with ICE. It's still your employer, right? You don't get to advocate your own position using your department's podium to do it. I don't know. I don't know if he was on duty or not when he did this stuff.
I doubt it. I don't think he was.
If he's off duty, I probably have a little bit of a problem with this because, hey, you still have a constitutional right to express your opinions as long as you're not doing it under the flag of your employer.
Got to go to the commercial break. We'll be right back. All right, guys, time to talk about GunLearn at GunLearn.com. But we have a new script here. So they were thrilled to announce an exciting new partnership with Smarter Degree. So if anyone has got that certified specialist designation from GunLearn.com, now you can convert that to college credit. So even if you've got it over the last 5 years through Smarter Degrees University Partners, you can convert that to college credit. So whether you're pursuing a degree, looking to maximize your value in your education, this partnership allows a new pathway to academic recognition for your firearms training. Now, GunLearn, of course, they're the first and the only company that offer a step-by-step program that takes you from your present knowledge level to become a safe, accurate, and competent certified firearm specialist. And they provide citations from federal law and ATF rulings for every point taught to ensure accuracy, and their training is approved by major forensic organizations, by law enforcement agencies, and also by firearm manufacturers. And they've been doing this since 1996. So you can start the day with online training or register to attend a live seminar, all that at gunlearn.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host. We're joined by former LAPD Commander Lieutenant Chuck Springer and also former Green Beret Delta Force operative Scott Steyer. So thanks for being on the show, guys. And yeah, we're talking about a lot of stuff, primarily though, illegals, the sheriff's going up against, you know, Governor Ron DeSantis. And then we've got this guy that we just covered working for an agency that posted some sarcastic content on social media. And, you know, he was already in the crosshairs already. They let him go. I have seen guys write stuff. I know before we went to commercial break, Lieutenant Springer made a comment about whether it was on or off duty content. But I know in holding cops to a different level of scrutiny, you know, I've seen guys write stuff before. You know, I got to admit, I am surprised. You know, we believe normally you can support progressive discipline. So if the other discipline they tried to give them did not go through, they theoretically need to start at a lower bar, right? I mean, if he had like a 3-day suspension or 10-day suspension without pay, and the next progressive one was being fired, I get it. But absent that, maybe giving them a written reprimand or maybe a day off, you know, that's what I would normally expect. So I suspect that even though he has a history, if none of the other stuff went through, that he's I wouldn't be surprised to see this guy get his job back, Chuck.
Yeah, probably, go to an administrative hearing or a civil suit. I think really the takeaway, though, is, and I used to tell my guys, stay off social media. If you're going to be on social media, you know, keep it, you know, family, friends stuff. You know, I'm on Facebook. I don't do any political posting on Facebook whatsoever. And I'm retired. In fact, I don't do a lot of Facebook, period. But you got to be careful with the social media. They do hold us as police officers to a different standard. And we got to be careful with what we do and what we post.
You know, Scott, if only there was like a website or message board that offered officers anonymity without the fear of repercussion from their agency if they posted something. If there was only something like that, that would solve the issue.
That would be brilliant. Something like maybe Leo Affairs type thing or...
.ch or whatever. You know,
So, and Chuck may not be that familiar with Leo Affairs. A lot of people are. We just relaunched Leo Affairs, and it's been down for 2-3 years now. And so just to bring people up to speed on that, I've got 7 minutes, but I'm going to give a little plug here. When I was at Tampa and I had 18 years on, I went through a hellacious, and Scott knows a lot of the story, internal affairs investigation and a criminal investigation. I got investigated criminally for 7 months, and they were trying to put me in jail. And the IA investigation lasted for 1 year and 7 months. That's a hard thing to forget. They kept it open. So long past the statute because they knew that as long as there was an active investigation, I couldn't talk about it. And they didn't want me to be able to talk, even though people involved in the investigation, even on the IA side, were running their mouths and committing a misdemeanor offense by talking about it. I couldn't, because they would have jammed me up if I would have. So after I went through that, and I ended up getting fully cleared and exonerated on everything. The criminal case, I was investigating some corrupt attorneys, and that went. The Hillsborough County Hillsborough County State Attorney's Office recused themselves. It went up to Governor Jeb Bush. He put the Sarasota County Sheriff's Office in charge of the investigation, and I got cleared. Because I was doing taped interviews and I was doing it. Tony wrote a pony. This is Detective Chip the Block. This is the date. This is the time. I'm calling this person. And I did everything by the book. Tony wrote a pony. And then the IA investigation, there were 21 allegations against me from the Hillsborough County State Attorney's Office. 21. And I wrote an 89-page document detailing, because I was keeping a personal journal on a daily basis of everything that I did. So I produced an 89-page document proving that I had done absolutely nothing wrong. I just proved all 21 allegations, and I didn't want other guys to have to go through what I went through. So I filed a whistleblower lawsuit. I filed a defamation of that was against my own agency and my chief, who I get along with now. And I filed a defamation of character lawsuit against the Hillsborough County State Attorney and the State Attorney's Office as well. And I also started Leo Affairs, and my agency hated me for it, but I started Leo Affairs because I wanted cops to be able to talk with anonymity about what was going on without the fear of repercussion. And so I started it with Sergeant Jim Preston. We helped guys with internal affairs investigations, all that stuff. After 12 years, I had taken it over and I ended up selling it right after I retired. And the new company has had it for the past 12 years. They took it offline 2 or 3 years ago. They didn't have the same tolerance for getting subpoenas. They told me it was never going to go down. But they took it down anyhow. So I have resurrected it, and now it's called leoaffairs.ch, which is the domain name extension for Switzerland, and is protected by Swiss privacy laws as well in Sweden. So leoaffairs.ch, we've got agencies up there. We're adding agencies. It's getting a lot of traction, and you have anonymity. We don't record IP addresses, and good luck. Subpoenaing a company in Sweden or Switzerland trying to get an IP address, that's not going to happen as well. But we don't even track the IP addresses server side anyhow. So there's a lot of protection there. We still moderate, but my old website that I ended up selling, I had over 500 law enforcement agencies in 18 countries and had over 400 volunteer moderators. It was a beast of a site. So done it before, know how they do it. This one's actually a lot better. I came up with this idea about offshore hosting and protection a few years ago, And sure enough, now the opportunity's presented itself, especially after watching everything in Minneapolis and stuff. It needs to get done. So Chuck, hearing you talk about that, I agree. It helps keep guys out of the grease, but if they want to talk about things professionally and affect positive change in law enforcement, and they need protection, especially if you're like a Fed or something, this is the way to be able to offer you to be able to do that with protection and just do it professionally, or else we'll delete the post. So,
yeah, no, that's a great idea. And you talk about IP addresses. I use a VPN. I don't know if a lot of people use that or not, but it's good for, you know, your own protection just from, you know, identity theft, et cetera, et cetera. But use a VPN. I'm technically in Boston right now, I think.
Yeah. So that's a good point. So, I recommend don't always look. You know my background. You can Google me. You can find my whole pedigree on LinkedIn and see what I've gone through and the steps I've gone through, the court cases I fought to protect identities, and where I fought 1-year legal battles all the way up to the second DCA in Florida, right under the Florida Supreme Court, to protect IP addresses and not to give them up to the Hillsborough County Sheriff's Office, and have case law on my side. All that, you can read about all that stuff. But if it was me, I simply would go with a VPN, a virtual private network, which protects your IP address, which I use as well. And I would, you can log in as a guest when you don't even have to be a registered user of the site. We let you do it as a guest. So that way it helps protect your identity, and you don't have to depend on me to do it for you, which I will. But if you want to take that extra layer of protection, you can do that too. We're about a minute and a half out, guys. Any thing you guys want to throw in there, or anything you want to cover that we haven't covered yet?
No, I'll just say on the four videos you sent out, I think they're all good shoots.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you think they're all good shoots? Yeah. Okay.
Excellent. Yeah. Good work by the cops, man. I mean, they were switched on. I looked at them, I was like, wow. I mean, they did good.
Yeah, really good communication on the one where they show up at the call and there's it's a family dispute. Mm-hmm. And the guy comes at him with a knife. I thought the shooting officer actually did a very good job coordinating, you know, the approach, you know, getting his partner to put gloves on before he starts doing CPR, stuff like that. So good.
I'll tell you what, that one. That must be the O'Fallon, Illinois one. Yeah. Video shows a fallen officer repeatedly shooting a knife-wielding suspect after two people end up being stabbed.
Hey, drop the fucking knife! Drop the knife! Drop the... Shots fired, shots fired. Suspect down, suspect down. Got people running from the residence.
Rumble.com. This is Butter. So it's the Illinois State Police, O'Fallon Police. They did the body cam and the dash cam, but it was O'Fallon police officer that shot and killed this knife building guy. 7:45 at night, August 29th, 2025. And it's a disturbance call, guy armed with a knife outside the home. And there are people, they're covered in blood. Well, this guy's covered in blood running away, and he's got the knife identified as Matthew Blank. The officer exits the car, police car, pulls out the service weapon, yells at the bad guy to drop the knife. And now the guy's walking towards the officer, doesn't drop it. And after, I guess, fired 7 shots in 2 seconds, so the guy collapses. So that's one you're talking about, right? We'll include that one in on the link. So, and I know the guy had a rifle.
Well, I thought the one in the convenience store was really good too. I mean, those cops were switched on. I think it was Baltimore. And then he chased him, you know, he followed him out, and then he said, hey, and he took off. And then as he was running, just in all the chaos, this guy reached in and he had a gun. And as soon as he pulled it out, I mean, they were switched on. And so,
yeah, you could tell from the video itself, you know, but when they freeze froze it or frame froze it, then you can clearly see, you know, the guy, it's not like he's trying to get
rid
of it.
Thanks, Chuck Springer. Thanks, Scott Steyer. Great show, guys. A shout out to our sponsors, Gallus.com, ComplyTechnologies.com, Gunler.com, MyMedicare.live, SafeguardRecruiting.com, and TwoBells.com. We'll see you guys back tomorrow, 12 noon Eastern.